Then of course I got to watch the Aggies because that's just something that I can't quit. Hello, HR. Welcome back to HR Hardball. Today we are going to talk to Andy Storch. Andy's the host of two podcasts, including the Talent Development Hot Seat and the Andy Storch Show. He's also the founder and host of the Talent Development Think Tank Conference and Community and the Talent Development Virtual Summit. Take a break, Andy. Andy is passionate about helping people fulfill their true potential, and his new book, Own Your Career, Own Your Life, is designed to help people stop drifting and take control of the futures. Most importantly, Andy is a husband, a father, and a friend who's on a mission to get the absolute most out of life and inspire others to do the same. We could all use some of that, so let's talk to Andy Storch.
You want to play hardball? I'm game.
For human resources professionals who walk the fine line between providing strategic support and grabbing a baseball bat, welcome to HR Hardball, hosted by John Reeves Whitaker. This is your leadership moment, folks. Don't screw it up.
Yep, we're on. We're on with Andy Storch. He of recently chosen a bad decision with his facial hair, but he's pulling it off. He looks like he could have been, an extra cast member on Boogie Nights or something. It's pretty cool. How you doing, Andy?
I'm doing great, John. I'm excited to be here and have this conversation. I think we're already off to a good start with mustaches, pulling kids' teeth, dogs, and whatever else has been going on before you even hit record. So I know we're going to be having a good conversation.
Yeah, you know, I feel like I can offer you very little in the way of advice with all that you've accomplished, but things like how to pull teeth out with a bow and arrow, that I can help you with.
I'd love it. I'd love to do that. Do you have like an online course or anything?
You know what? I just try to give you as little direction as possible and let you kind of use your imagination.
Here's a bow and arrow. Go.
Right.
I like it.
So I got to tell you, man, I've enjoyed your book. I mean, we all get a lot of books. We're here today to discuss your book, which is Own Your Life, Own Your Career, Own Your Life. And I've been one of the more fortunate people that you've entrusted to take a sneak peek and proof it. And I have. I'm loving it. I got to tell you, it really is two books. So I asked you this question when, you know, we were communicating back and forth with email. When you were writing this, who was, you know, in your mind, who's your audience for this book?
So it's always a good idea when you're writing a book, creating a podcast, a blog, any content, they say to, you know, think of that one person and write for them. And for me, I wasn't always thinking that way, but in general, when I create something like this, I am writing for me 10 years ago. Or me 15 years ago, or basically me in the past before I stopped drifting and took control and started owning my life. Because I went on my own journey to get to this point. I've made tons of my own mistakes, you know, as we all have. And that's why I say a lot when people ask me about the book and what it means to take ownership is that, you know, we've all ended up where we did, or our career started usually accidentally. Someone recommended a major and we were like, yeah, I'll try that. And then you ended up and it stumbled into one job into the next or whatever. It's not about feeling guilty for anything that's happened in the past. It's about, you know, taking ownership where you are now for your career and your life, and then making a plan and getting really intentional with your actions going forward. So for me, I'm speaking to me in the past, anybody like me. And what I've learned too is that, you know, especially as I've been creating content over the years, that if I am facing any kind of challenge or have faced any kind of challenge or have gone through or had certain thoughts, then chances are there are millions of other people with the same challenges and thoughts, right? We always think that we are unique snowflakes and we're all, you know, we are all special and unique, but most of the challenges and things that we face are common, or at least there are other people that have gone through that. So if I can take all the lessons from my journey and speak kind of to my younger self, I know there are tons of other ambitious professionals out there who are trying to figure out, like, what should I do? How can I take more ownership? You know, I feel like there's more for me, and I'm looking for some direction, some answers. And I want to, you know, give this to them to wake them up and start taking some action.
Let's talk a little bit about hoops. Hoops is how you recruit and hire top talent. The Hoops talent acquisition solution removes exhaustive tasks in the hiring process, such as finding candidates, screening, candidate follow-up and support, and interview scheduling. God, that's a pain. Give me some of this. Each and every candidate will feel engaged and get the chance to show who they are and what they can do, ensuring a remarkable candidate experience. If you'd like to learn more, go to hoopshr.com. Well, it's interesting, too, because, you know, most of us who are in the game, either talent acquisition or HR, and have been in it for a while, like, you know, I'm a dinosaur. But you, some of the things that you put in there, you take for granted. They seem pretty obvious. I mean, these are things that you need to do, especially now, because it's if you're not building your network and if you're not reaching out and if you're not doing things, you're not necessarily having all the live opportunities to meet. But I've shared this with you, too, that it's not just the young people now. I mean, we might take it for granted because we're in the game, but I've had more calls recently from friends and colleagues who've been in the same job for 20 plus years. And for the first time, and probably they thought never was going to happen again, they're looking for a job. And they, I mean, very basic things about their LinkedIn profile and things like that. They don't have the, you know, the ticket for admission even. So I thought, looking at it from those things, I was like, the timing was really weird. I was reading that part and I was like, wow, I got to pass this on to so-and-so because this is exactly the, you know, this is basically the blueprint for how you get started doing this.
Yeah, we're in a crazy time, right? You and I are recording this in November. You know, we're still in the middle of the COVID-19 pandemic. Who knows what's going to happen with the economy and, you know, certain companies, industries. I heard from so many people over the last 6 months that they've been laid off and they are looking for a new job, trying to make some changes. First of all, I always like to reframe that to say, and I hope this doesn't like offend some people who are going, because I know how challenging it can be. But oftentimes when people get laid off, I'll say, congratulations, this is a new opportunity for you, right? Yeah. I know it's hard right now, but there was probably something about that last job that you wanted to change, or you were thinking about trying to do something else. And oftentimes we don't always get opportunities to really take a step back and reflect and think about what we truly want to do and maybe make a big pivot, maybe make a big change. Most people are afraid to make changes like that. And so I'm a big fan of turning challenges into opportunities. And I know it can be really tough. You know, like you're not set up well, you weren't expecting it. You got a mortgage and a spouse and kids and all that stuff. Like I understand, I'm there. But if you can shift your mindset and just think of it as, okay, this is a cool opportunity. Let me take advantage of this now. And maybe I haven't been doing the things that I could or should have been doing, to your point, to set myself up, like building a network, building a brand, things like that. Maybe now is the time to start doing that. And I also wrote this book for people who haven't had to face that yet, but it's going to happen. Something is going to happen that's going to cause you to go, oh, I need to make a change. And I want people to be ready for that. So the second part, you know, the book split into three parts. The second part is all about preparing for the future of work, future career change, by doing things like investing in continuous learning, building your network, building your brand, because I want people to be ready to take advantage of those opportunities, no matter where you are in your journey, because where you are right now is perfect. There's an old proverb that says that the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The second best time is today.
Hey, HR. Hopefully you're liking what you hear so far. And if you do, please check out some of my former episodes. Subscribe. I think there's like a bell on there too. You can be alerted. I'm new to this game. But also you can check out my blog. That's where this all started 10 years ago. HRHardball.com. Please subscribe, read the articles, get on the list, and let's hardball. Well, and I don't want to bury the lead because you keep saying things that that remind me of some things I wanted to ask you. But going back to your original statement here about, you know, you didn't want to offend anybody by saying, you know, congratulations. Well, I know for a fact that every time those job changes have happened to me, whether they were my choice or not my choice, I have had that attitude pretty much like, well, I know there's another door that's going to open. It should be kind of interesting to see. Not everybody has that attitude. And I think it's such a self-fulfilling prophecy when you go into it with that even the people I've talked to who've been in jobs for this long tenure, they are in a way, this happened to my wife, by the way, she was at the same company for like 12 years, would have never left, even though she was miserable. Yeah. You know, we kind of get used to the status quo. It's comfy, even when it's miserable. Yeah. It's a comfortable misery. right. if that makes any sense. So yeah, sometimes you need a kick out of the nest. And for these people, I'm excited for them because, you know, they're going to be learning. God, that was, I mean, the job search game now compared to what it was in the year 2000, you know, for some of these people is just night and day. They're going to be learning
very different, right?
Day.
Oh yeah. It's like, I think you and I have both been married for a long time, right? It's like dating 20 years ago versus now, like, oh, the game has completely changed, and getting a job is very different too. And, I thought it was interesting. You know, I appreciate you being part of the Advanced Reader team. We had a Facebook group I created, and, someone posted in there, I asked about some takeaways early on, and someone said, your statement in the book where you said, it's never been easier to find a new job made me really uncomfortable because I feel like it is really hard. And I was like, well, I stand by my statement. I know that there's a lot more competition right now, but it's never been easier to go get a job. I mean, you can go on LinkedIn. You can talk to anybody. Companies are hiring on Snapchat and Instagram. Like, the jobs are, you know, they're out there looking. There's a million methods. In the old days, you'd have to do some hardcore networking, stop by businesses, make phone calls, whatever, right? Now, I mean, just get on LinkedIn and you'll find stuff. I'm not saying you'll get it. You still got to have a great resume, show up for the interview, impress people, ideally make some great connections, but it's never been easier to go find it. And I think there's so many opportunities out there when you're willing to see it that way too. That's the important thing, the mindset, like you said. And I wanted to share my own quick story. You know, I don't have a job anymore. I used to work in corporate, and I worked for a corporate consulting firm for many years. And I went out on my own, you know, kind of as an independent consultant a couple of years ago. And then this year completely on my own, because I'm so drawn towards entrepreneurship. It's something I love, kind of being able to make my own path. I love the risk and the ups and downs and everything from it. That's not for everybody, but it is for me. And going back to January, February, March, 2020, my whole business was selling and running in-person training programs. I was flying all over the country, running leadership development workshops, standing up in front of a room, you know, shaking hands with people, teaching, facilitating. It's what I love to do. My business was growing. And then obviously COVID hit and everything completely changed. I used to be on planes all the time, and I haven't been on a plane in, as you and I record this, in 8 months. And I love it. And I keep telling people, I sometimes hesitate to say this because, you know, I'm lucky. No one in my family has gotten seriously ill. I know there's a lot of people that have faced very terrible challenges out there in 2020. This year has been the best year of my life. It's been fantastic, but a lot of it has to do with the outlook and the mindset and how you see things, because that determines your own happiness and fulfillment. It all comes down to your perception of the world. There's lots of challenges. And I've had lots of challenges, and I don't, you know, most of the year not making as much money as I used to, but I'm having a lot of fun and I'm home with my kids every single night. It's awesome.
Well, you know, what's funny is I was, talking to Dr. Pillay on one of my last episodes, and he's just, you know, best attitude any guy you ever talked to. And the quote that stuck with me is, you know, happiness comes first and then success. Mm. So that's why when you're talking about, for instance, you just mentioned there at the end, maybe not making as much money as you're used to or things, and you're happier, it doesn't really matter. I mean, you got to, and a lot of what this pandemic has forced on all of us, it's changed everything. It's changing us culturally, is changing us politically, is changing us in the sharing of news. I mean, God knows there's a lot of growing pain going on right now.
A lot of craziness going on. Yeah.
Oh man. But it's also forced a lot of people who would have sat in a situation to make a different decision and to look outside. And I think for a lot of people, it will be for their betterment. Again, that's not to take anything away from people who are suffering hardship from this, but
that's right.
You know, we still live in the best place in the world and the best place in the world to find a job. So I think there's ways to do it. You just got to tell yourself you're going to do it.
That's right. And you have to take ownership and take initiative and go out and make that happen. You can't sit around waiting for other people to do it. You know, that means having that conversation with your manager or going and finding a recruiter or someone you can work with to help you if you're in a position where you're looking for a new job. Hire a career coach, be willing to maybe invest time and money and take the initiative and don't wait for anybody else. That's what it is. Taking full responsibility for your situation, you know, not blaming anybody else for what's going on, because that never helps anybody, right? It's just, you're kind of wasting time with that. And if you're in a position in HR, I know, you know, you are, and a lot of other people are, you've got a lot of people in different positions through this, and you have an opportunity to help people through that journey and shift perspectives a little bit and have those conversations. I think there's through like this year, HR and talent development, especially where I, my niche, where I work in, I think it's never been more important in the history of corporate America. But only if you step up into that strategic role where you, you take that responsibility seriously, that I'm here to help my people, enable them to do the best work of their lives, even if they, you know, have to do it remotely, or even if they have to go find a new job, I'm going to help them so that they always remember me for that.
Yeah, you can't blow the moment. I mean, this is HR's moment, really. For all the time that you've heard the rote phrase, well, we got to get a seat at the chair, the table or whatever. We've got the big chair. We're sitting right up there at the head,
right?
Because of all the impact it had on people. And that's why this has been a, you know, for my own personal and professional development, you know, I'm 50. And this year has been unbelievable in what it's forced me to do and to grow. Just doing things like this and having to deal with the pandemic and then having to deal with bringing people back from the pandemic. And we're all learning. And anytime you're stretching what you already know, I think that's a good place to be. So, one of the cool things about your book, too, is you mentioned some other books. And I read a few of them.
Wow. Nice.
Yeah. You mentioned, here's what, Miracle Morning. Said Hal Elrod.
Yep.
Real quick, how did that first catch your eye and how did you implement it in your own life?
So the Miracle Morning is the book that completely changed my life. There's been a few books that have been game changers for me. Mindset by Dr. Carol Dweck, a few others. But the Miracle Morning, written by Hal Elrod, I actually heard Hal on a podcast just like this in January 2016. I remember it well. And my life was good. I had a six-figure job with a consulting firm, married with a daughter and a son on the way. And everything seemed good. But at the same time, I felt like there was something missing, something I could be doing more. I didn't know what it was. And I was kind of grasping, you know, thinking about investment strategies. I think I was listening to an investment podcast when I heard him. And he was talking about this book, The Miracle Morning. And I had never done anything personal development related. I hadn't read anything in personal development. And I just knew when I listened to that interview, like, I have to go get that book. And it's the same thing I hope people will say when they hear me, when they hear this, right? But I said, I got to go get that book. And I bought it and I devoured it. And of course, The Miracle Morning is basically Hal Elrod was a coach. And, you know, he was down in the dumps and he went on a project, kind of a mission to find out, like, what are all the things that the most successful people do? And he found the six most common things that successful people do. And he put a program together where you get up an hour earlier than you need to, and you do these six things. You meditate, you recite affirmations, you use visualization, you read, you write in a journal, and you exercise. And he started working with clients, and everybody loved it. And so he turned it into a book. And so I read that book, and I started practicing the Miracle Morning. I started meditating for the first time, started using a journal for the first time. I started reading a lot more. I was already exercising a lot, using affirmations for the first time. That was in 2016, and I still do it every single day since then. It's been almost 5 years, and it's changed my life. It's definitely like allowed me to do and accomplish so much more. And so I give him, Hal, so much credit for that and that book, because it did so much for me. And I hope that I can, in turn, help a lot of other people similarly.
Well, it's funny because I'm not what you'd call a morning person.
Yeah.
I'm more of a night owl. My wife and I, that's kind of our time. We'll stay up till midnight almost every night, just catching up on with each other and some of these ridiculous shows we watch. But I've put it actually before I even read your book, I just started doing this because I felt compelled. I was called to do it for some reason. Then reading your book, I saw the Hal Elrod reference, read that book. And I was like, all right, you know, I do all these things, but I don't do it structured. I don't do it at a dedicated time and a dedicated place. And so I started doing that. And it's amazing how I am excited to get up at 6 a.m. because I get my time to do my things.
Yes.
It's peaceful. It's quiet, which, you know, anybody with kids,
especially if you have kids. Yeah.
Yeah.
Quiet time early.
Great time.
I love that.
I mean, I thought that was great because, and again, for people who are looking to own their career or own their life, it does require routine, ritual, structure. And especially if you're picking up a new one. So that actually was a real quick adaption or adaptation. And I know most of the people who know me were shocked to see me getting up at 6 a.m.
So. I'm happy to hear that. You got to be careful. You get addicted to it and you start creeping up earlier. I was like 5:30, then 5, and then I started getting up at 4:30 every day. Now I'm averaging around 5 a.m. again.
Are you?
Yeah.
Oh man. Well, we'll see. I'm not gonna.
But I am more of a morning person, and I think I said in the book too. Like you do you. If you really are a night owl, then do some of this stuff at night. It's just, you know, just do it. Just take care of yourself. It's about living intentionally. It's not about living the way other people live, right? You do your style.
Yeah. You be you is great advice because we've all got strengths and all that. I do think, however, that what was compelling me is I know the later it gets in the day, the more apt something else is to come up and get right in the way of it.
So. Yeah. That's why it's all about starting the day with intention. I mean, most people, you start the day with reaction mode. People can relate to this, right? Your phone's on your nightstand next to your bed. You wake up, first thing you do, you look at it. You see a couple text messages. Oh, let me check my emails. Oh crap. That email. Oh, they need that. All right. Let me get ready. Let me get to work and let me get started on this stuff. And then more emails come in, meetings start. And before you know it, the day's over and you've never taken any time for you. You've never acted with any type of intention to start the day, doing something that's good for you or help you move something further that you want to do. So that's why I love this, because I get up and I do things intentionally, like meditate, like take a walk, like read a book, plan my day, write in my journal before I ever respond to an email, you know, usually a couple hours later. And then I'll end up working on some of my most important work. Like the book, I wrote the whole book pretty much between 6 and 7 a.m. Wow. 7 days a week. Before the kids got up. And then when the kids got up, then like, okay, I'm done writing the book and I'll write more tomorrow. And that's when I get my most important work done, because there's nobody else. And now I do have, because of this, I have a lot of friends who are early morning risers now, and we'll start texting each other. And it's like, wait a minute, I'm defeating the whole for this. But you start the day with a lot more intention.
Well, and so when you talk about that, that's when it seems like you make that transition to owning your life versus owning your career. And another book you mentioned was this Design Your Future. And I don't think that's the entire title.
Oh, Design Your Future by Dominic Cortuccio.
Cortuccio. Yeah. Okay. I didn't read the whole book, but I did read enough to know this is where the concept of drifting, I think that's a big concept mentioned here. Yep. For those people who aren't absolutely certain what you mean by it, can you kind of explain what you mean by drifting here?
Yeah. So the concept of drift, and I first heard this from Dominic when I interviewed him a couple times on my podcast and got to know him. But it really comes from Napoleon Hill, who is most famous for writing a book called Think and Grow Rich, which is pretty much the most successful personal development book of all time. One of the most successful books of all time, published in the 1930s. It's 80 years old. He interviewed dozens and dozens and dozens of really successful people like Henry Ford and Dale Carnegie and put that book together. What a lot of people didn't know is he also interviewed hundreds or thousands, I think, of regular people, asking them later in life, you know, about their regrets. And he wrote this book called Outwitting the Devil. That is essentially,
I did read that.
Read it? Yeah. Oh man, it's powerful, right? It's basically a conversation that he's having with the devil about how the devil captures the minds and souls of people on earth. And this is not necessarily a religious thing. We're not going down that road. It's a bit of a parable, if you will. He never even says this didn't happen, but we can assume it didn't. Anyway, he talks about this concept of drift, which is how the devil controls people's minds, which is where society kind of takes over and we get in this reaction mode and kind of drift along through life doing things that we think we should do. He talks about, all the sins. He talks about smoking and drinking too much and gambling and spending too much time watching sports, or back then it wasn't even TV, but other things that are kind of time wasters and people not really being intentional with their time. And there's tons of examples in there. And it's amazing. The book is 80 years old. He never published it because he and his wife agreed that it was just way too risky. Because he's pretty condemning of the church, the school system, society writ large. And it eventually got published, I think, in the early 2000s. And it holds true today, right?
Oh, he's ahead of his time. There's no doubt.
Way ahead of his time, right? And even today, you look around, some things are better, some things are much worse. But I see it all the time. And I wanted to introduce this concept in my book without trying to preach or point fingers or judge anybody, because we all are on our own journey. It's not about me judging you. It's just about introducing this and saying, hey, if you are spending all your time doing these things, watching Netflix, whatever it is, just realize that that takes time away from other things. Everything in life is a trade-off. And if you have big goals, like you want to make a career change, you want to get promoted, you want to make more money and travel the world when that's available again, whatever it may be, when you're spending all your time watching sports or Netflix, you're not spending time working on that goal. And again, it's okay. You get to spend your time however you want. One of the things I think I mentioned in my own revelation, looking back in my 20s, I was a huge sports fan. I spent so much time watching sports, you know, dozens and dozens of hours, and it didn't get me anywhere. It doesn't do anything for your life. And I'm not saying you shouldn't watch sports or relax every now and then. I mean, John, you and I have, you know, texted about football. We both have our favorite teams are in the SEC, and we watch a little college football every now and then. But when it's all you do all weekend, that's fine. But just realize, like, you're taking time away from doing other things that could be more fulfilling or help you achieve your goals or progress. That's one of the big examples I give of where a lot of people are drifting.
Stop trying to guess where the best talent is and start using MC's data. MC has labor data down to the county level. Find out where the best talent for a specific occupation is, what the going compensation rates are, and who else is competing for that talent, all within MC tools. MC helps recruiters and staffing companies everywhere meet their hiring goals by eliminating the guesswork. To learn more about how MC can help you win top talent, visit economicmodeling.com. Once again, that is MC, E-M-S-I. Well, it's funny, or maybe it's not funny. COVID, one of the big lessons to me was I, like you, sports fanatic. We have 11 TVs in our house. My wife always makes fun of room to room. She can hear where I am because that TV will go on.
Yeah.
Always had something on. This year, and again, I'm a huge, especially baseball, but I didn't watch a single game. I didn't watch a single game of baseball. I didn't watch a single game of basketball. I've watched a couple games of the Cowboys. And of course, I got to watch the Aggies because that's just something that I can't quit. But it is it's amazing how much time you get back on your weekends. It's amazing.
It's crazy. Or even in the week, if you're a baseball fan. Well, I used to live in L.A.
Oh, God,
I lived in L.A. and I was a huge Dodger fan. And I went to about 20 to 25 home games a year. And I watched every single game on TV, 162 games a year. What a waste of time.
Yeah.
Like, I enjoyed it in the moment, but I mean, I could have got another degree. I could have had a side job. I could have been taking my wife out on dates, like building that relationship. Like, I mean, there's a million things I could have been doing that would have been more productive. And again, like I said at the beginning of this interview, this is not about feeling guilty for the past. We grew up the way we grew up, right? We made the decisions we made. It's just about waking up. And like, I started realizing that. And over the years, eliminating sports, I cut out pro football, I cut out baseball, I cut out basketball, to the point that the only over the last few years, the only sports I would watch would be University of Florida football, you know, my alma mater. That's the only, and even sometimes I miss those games. And I feel better because, you know, what's always funny to me, and sports fans are going to hate this, right? If you like to watch a lot of sports, you stay up late watching this big game. I go to bed and don't watch it. And I wake up the next morning and I read the quick blurb, the highlights, and you and I have the same knowledge.
Well, I'll tell you a convicting little comment one of my sons told me, my 16-year-old. All right. You know, during this lockdown, they started watching more and more of their videos, and they're on YouTube constantly. And I would walk by and they're actually watching videos of people playing games. Oh my God. And I walked by and I'm like, you mean you're going to sit here for 3 hours and watch somebody else play a game?
That's right.
And he said, well, you do that every night watching the baseball game.
It's true. It is true. They got you there.
Oh man. That was like, okay, go back to what you were doing. let's don't talk about me anyway. No, I thought, you know what? The major, one of the big things I got out of the book, The Outwitting the Devil, which I think is great. It's such an easy read because it is like you're saying, it's so common sense, but
yeah.
People who operate out of fear versus people who operate out of faith.
Yes.
And that is, that's something I live by. I hate fear mongering. I hate people who are afraid, not hate people. I hate when people feel trapped by fear and don't make decisions when there's a whole lot of opportunity for you, but it takes you having some courage to step out there. I thought that was a great message.
Yeah. Huge.
So the second part of the book, the Over Your Life, I thought, you know what, or Own Your Life, you could have That might be another book completely, because I think you could have gone even deeper and deeper.
Yeah.
Not that you couldn't have gone on the other half, but that really, to me, that really spoke to me. And when I first started this, I said, your book is actually not just one book, I think. For somebody who is more
than way, it's funny you mentioned that. I just have to mention that.
Yeah.
It was longer when I wrote it.
Yeah.
And my wife helped me like kind of edit the, before we went to a professional editor, move things around. And she was like, this third section is too long. And this one chapter right here is a whole book. So I cut everything back with that in mind, that a lot of what I cut is, you know, that I can turn that into a whole future book. And why not get this done? And then you get momentum and work on the next one. And I don't know if it's own your business, own your life, or just own your life and expanding on all the things you can do in the personal development realm. But yeah, I appreciate you saying that. And it was hard to cut after writing all that.
Yeah.
But it was the right decision. So the book wasn't too long and it wasn't two or three books in one.
So the, and I thought for people who are reading this, you're thinking who your audience is. Yeah, it can help people who are looking for a job. But as far as, you know, life skills, mindset, the own your life piece, I thought was great because it could speak to, I mean, however, whatever age or stage you're at in your life, in your career or your personal life, those are the types of things that, you know, they translate to personal, professional. And I thought that was great. You did, I mean, you really did a tremendous job. I enjoyed being one of your, I don't even think I offered you many edits because I got too caught up in reading it.
Oh, that's okay, because there were probably two or three people who went through it with a fine tooth comb and found several typos, which I appreciate, by the way.
Yeah.
I was able to fix all of them before I published the book, which is great. But I mean, one guy, I mean, he sent me screenshots of every single one, all these little things. I couldn't believe it. And I told him, I was like, man, like you have a calling as an editor. Like, why aren't you editing books right now? Because you just found all these tiny things, including names that a couple names I misspelled, that not even people that he knows. And he's like, I just felt like I should look it up. And I realized that you spelled the name wrong. I was like, how did you do that? So I'm not very detail oriented, by the way. So I'm amazing.
No, neither am I. I'm like, this is great. I'm going to blow through this thing. And because I saw some of the remarks people were saying, look at this. I was like, really? Yeah. It was? I was like, huh, let me go back and look at that.
I felt bad. My editor was in the group too. And he saw some of the, he's like trying not to kick himself, but he caught 95%. There's always going to be things that slip through.
So in the Own Your Life, I know you talk about mindset and challenges. You talk a lot about challenges. What are the, you know, as far as the main talking points that you would want people to remember in your mindset? How you look at your mindset?
Well, the biggest thing, and you know, you may notice a theme in the book is that I mention a lot of other books. I borrow the things I've learned, because like everyone, I am a amalgamation of all the things that I've learned from other people. So in mindset, I want to help people build more of a mindset of resilience, a mindset of ownership. The big things from that are, and I refer back a lot to the book Mindset by Dr. Carol Dweck, which was a game changer for me. And it helps people help me move from having more of a fixed mindset, which is the belief that, you know, you're smart or you're not, you're creative or you're not. If you fail at something, then you are a failure, to more of a growth mindset, which is that means that we can always improve. We can always get better. In fact, we should be excited about challenging situations, about challenges, because that's where we learn and grow. And if we make a mistake, if we fail, that's awesome, because that is an opportunity to learn. And so that was a big shift for me. And I want to help people make that shift as well. Because part of this is you're taking ownership, but also I want people to set big goals, you know, and that big goal could be move up the ladder and be, you know, CHRO or CFO one day. It could be that you want to change careers and move from HR to marketing, or it could be that you just want to get that next move to director or whatever. You want to leave and start your own business. Everybody has dreams. And I want people to be able to set and achieve big goals. And I think the mindset is a big part of that, because if you're going to go after big things, there's going to be stuff that doesn't go your way. And if you're willing to kind of roll with the punches and take these challenges and learn from them, I think it builds a lot more resilience. That's what has allowed me to go out and try and do so many things. You know, I started two podcasts. I've hosted a conference, hosted a virtual summit. I run a membership community. And I keep trying all these things, and none of them go perfectly, but they keep building and building, and I'm having fun as a result. And then the book, et cetera. So that's one big tenet. Another one is the shift, getting people out of a victim mindset. So stop thinking that life happens to you, that things are always happening to you, that bad things are happening to you, that, you know, someone cuts you off in traffic, that there's somehow the universe is trying to do something to you. Instead, shifting to everything in life happens for me, and therefore everything is an opportunity. Everything is a blessing. Everything is great. Everything creates that chance for me to do something new, whether it's just learning from the opportunity. So when challenges come up, I talk about the three questions that I like to ask whenever facing a big challenge. Number one is, what's great about this? So COVID hits, shuts down my business. What's great about it? Well, I want to be at home more with my kids. That's cool. Number two, what can we learn from this? So, you know, what can I learn from this? Maybe I need to do some more, create different streams of income and prepare for the future more. Or maybe I need to be building a bigger network in case I lose my job. And what does this make possible? Right? Because when those challenges come up, always new opportunities get created. So it made it possible. COVID made it possible for me to pivot and start a new business, for me to spend more time writing my book, for me to spend more time with my kids, with my family. And when you look at things that way, it makes it a lot easier to deal with the challenges of life and business that will come up, because they will always be there. And it all comes back to taking personal responsibility, which means I focus on what I'm in control of, and I don't worry about the rest. And I don't get mad at things that are going on around me. I have a no complaining challenge in there. Stop complaining and getting mad at other people and blaming other people. Again, someone cuts you off in traffic. Oh, well, slow down. Like, what is the big deal? Everyone's ego gets, you know, you get offended and stuff. Like, it's just, these things are happening. Focus on what's in your control, and you're going to be a lot happier and more fulfilled as a result.
I think, great advice, because especially now, you know, for a lot of people, emotions running high and a lot of things that we're dealing with at the same time. And I think you mentioned the definitions of success and failure and how we need to, you know, make sure we're reminding ourselves what those really mean. Because, you know, I could have been classified as one of those people probably many, many years ago as, yeah, why is this stuff happen to me? Why didn't the good thing ever happen to me?
Sure.
And I got over that, thankfully, to where, you know, I've actually been terminated before and been laughing throughout the conversation because I was just ready for, you know, what's going to come next. This is great.
Yeah.
I mean, it is. You almost have to start with little things. You have to, you know, catch yourself, and because you're not going to overnight become all of a sudden an optimist, but you really do have to, just for your own health, mental health, physical health, emotional health.
Yeah. Little things, right? For me, it was like dropping something or spilling something at home instead of cursing, laughing instead.
Yeah.
This is funny. This happens.
We are our own worst critic. A lot of times we call ourselves names that, you know, we would punch somebody in the mouth for calling us.
That's right. You wouldn't let anybody else talk to you that way. But
no, it's ridiculous. I don't know why that is. Maybe, you know, that has something to do with how we're competitive or how we were raised. I don't know. I know that there's no excuse for talking to myself that way though. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's sort of, you got to change your mindset, change your dialogue, and make those little changes in your behaviors that lead to some better outcomes.
And yeah. Start with the micro changes and work from there.
You know, I was going to ask you a question too. Did Florida and A&M play this year yet?
I can't remember. I haven't really been following football that much.
I'm trying to remember game. I'll have to ask somebody. I was asking for a friend because.
Yeah. I'll have to look that up. But I think I heard that they might've played, and Texas A&M broke pretty much all safety protocols and packed the stands with people.
Oh, yeah. There's no doubt we did that. That's such an Aggie thing to do. I can't even tell you.
But it is funny. I heard, you know, so Florida and Texas A&M did play for 99% of your audience that didn't follow this. And Texas A&M had like 40,000 fans in the stands, which is kind of ridiculous. Obviously, a lot less than the capacity of 100,000, but more than you would expect during a pandemic.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, I think I don't follow this that closely, but I think there were people, including maybe even the coach of my team, Florida, who said, grumbling, oh, they had too many people and it was so much noise. And again, to me, that is an example of giving up personal responsibility. You're blaming someone else. Like, you had a chance to go win the game. Yeah, it was louder than you expected, but you had a chance. Personal responsibility said, you know, complaining and victim mindset says, oh, it was louder than we expected. They had too many people there. That's why we lost. Personal responsibility is, oh man, it was louder than I expected. I probably should have prepared for that. It was still on me. I still had a chance to win that game. And they absolutely did. I bring that up because I think we all face situations like that. It's so easy and it feels good in the moment to give up responsibility and blame someone else for our problems when 90% of the time or more, we can take responsibility and figure out a way that we could have done something better. We can learn from the situation and we can get better for next time. And I just find that when I take that personal responsibility and I stop blaming and complaining, I feel so much better. I feel so much more fulfilled because now I have the control. I'm not giving up control. I have control over my life. And I find that more and more I do that, the more and more I feel in control. And I always recommend people, you know, operate that way as well.
You know, footnote to Dan Mullen, the Florida coach, talking about, you complained about how many people, his second part of that comment was, so I hope we pack the swamp next week.
Right. Yeah. Which he got just hammered for because obviously that was even less safe. I mean, I understand why he said that.
I do too. I thought it was hilarious. I was like, okay, yeah, there you go.
It's irresponsible. And I think he got criticized by the chief scientist at our university or whatever, but you know, people say these things. It's funny.
Yeah, I know. I mean, well, you guys did invent Gatorade. So you got
that's right.
Your science department has a little credit. All right, man. If people want to find your book, where are they going to find it?
So the book is called Own Your Career, Own Your Life. It's available on Amazon in paperback, Kindle. I'm working on the audiobook, not quite ready yet, but it will be out there soon. I've also created, you'll be interested to hear, John, I've also created a companion journal from the book. So you've been through the book, you know, there's a lot of advice. There are a lot of exercises, a lot of questions to say, hey, stop and think about this and write this down in your journal. And a lot of habits that I want people to work on, because for me, when it comes to achieving big goals, it's always come down to habits. What habits do you want to get rid of? Like watching baseball every day. What habits do you want to establish? Like studying every day for an hour, or, you know, building a network and meeting three new people a week or whatever the habit is. And so I created a journal that matches the book, and you can go through that journal and also track your progress over the course of 90 days. So set some big goals and track progress. That'll be available on Amazon as well. I've also, since we've been talking about careers, I created a report that your audience might be interested in. It's the top 5 most common career mistakes that people make. So while I was writing this book, I went out and surveyed my network. I also have interviewed hundreds of people for my own podcast, and I asked people about their biggest career mistakes. And I compiled those into the top 5 most common. For instance, one of them is a lot of people said that they took a job or they were in a job in a company that had a toxic culture. And they believed that if they stayed, they personally could change that culture. And mm-hmm. every single one of them was wrong and eventually had to leave the company, right? So that's one of them. So if you want to find out the rest, you want to see if you're making any of these mistakes, you can get that report by going to ownyourcareerownyourlife.com/mistakes. ownyourcareerownyourlife.com/mistakes. That'll also get you to my email list and updates and stuff. And of course, you can find me on LinkedIn and Instagram every day. And my podcasts are The Talent Development Hot Seat and The Andy Storch Show.
That's awesome stuff there. By the way, a lot of women make that mistake too. They think they can change a screwed up dude.
Hey, man.
You know, it plays out in all kinds of life. Man, I wish you the best of luck on this one. I know that we'll talk often, but really impressed. I know this was something you obviously put a lot of work into, and there's a lot of books out there. I would highly recommend this one. It's applicable. And like you said, every chapter does have old habit, new habit. I think it's real easy to follow along. And if you are doing your morning routines, whatnot, it's a good pattern to fall into.
Definitely.
So I appreciate it. And if you have anything to say on the way out, but I just have enjoyed your time here.
Thank you. I appreciate it. The only thing I'll add is just to tie it all up by saying this: nobody cares more about your career than you do, right? You might, maybe your mom does or your spouse, they care about you, but nobody cares more about your career than you do. So you have to be the one to take the initiative and go act and go after your dreams and your goals. So I hope that people listening will take some lessons, take some action, connect with me if you have any questions. And I just really appreciate the opportunity to come on the show.
Yeah, man, that's good stuff. So we're going to end there because those are some good words to live by. So this is Andy Storch, John Whitaker. We're out.
Out. Boom.
Special thanks to our friends at Hoops and also at MC, our sponsor for the episode. And special thanks for this amazing beat, original music made by my son. If you want to find him on SoundCloud, you can find him at Junk Boy Jack, or look for him online, junksjoint.com. Find him on Twitter, junksjoint. Y'all be cool. Whitaker out.